Hey everyone, my name is Deanna and I'm the resident nerd here in Hightower's office. We've got a special here for you listeners today. Hightower has been hosting weekly live chats on Facebook with activists and agitators from all around the country. The show is called The Hightower Chat and Chew, and we're taking our most recent episode with George Gale of People's Action and Maria Elena Fournier of Michigan People's Campaign and bringing it to you here in the Radio Lowdown podcast feed. It's about 45 minutes long, and we know that the audio quality in some spots is rough, but the meat of the conversation is so powerful that we wanted to share it with y'all anyways. And we're hoping to bring more of these special events to your ears in the future. Tune into the Chat and Chew live on Facebook on Tuesday evenings. Watch past episodes of the show at hightowerlowdown.org/chatandchew. And let us know what you think about this audio-only version. Now, here's the show.
All righty. Hi-de-ho, folks. Great to be with you for another Hightower Lowdown happy hour on Facebook Live. This evening, we're going to ask the big question, can we talk? Can we just have a conversation? I'm talking about Americans, Trumpeteers versus Trump thumpers, city people versus rural families. Can America actually have a quasi-rational conversation with itself? That really is what we're talking about here. And can we find common ground? And if so, and this is the most important part, how do we do it? How do we even start? How can we make it happen? We want you to join the conversation here. Maybe you're feeling a little dislocated, a little left out, having a desire to be a part of a larger conversation. Join us. Put your comments forward, your comments, your inspirations, your jokes, whatever it is you've got. We want to hear from you here tonight. This is, after all, a happy hour. And happily, we have two leaders of a creative, gutsy, grassroots group called People's Action. It is a nationwide organization of multiracial, poor, and working class families, people coming together to try to see if we can work together to restore, as Franklin Roosevelt said years ago, America to its own people. That's what we're trying to do. Well, this is a group that has not just been talking about having such conversations, but lo and behold, they have been going out in the countryside, all across this country, having such conversations, and indeed having thousands of them. So let's start with the director of People's Action, a guy I've known for some time, George Gale. George is based in Chicago. But he is the son of Southern Indiana. And I've known this community organizer extraordinary for a long, long time. And he, by the way, has a surprising talent, which we're going to reveal a little later on our discussion here tonight. So string them up, George. Get ready. And I've had more than one happy hour with George on bar stools out across America. So what's in your libation hand there, George, tonight?
We got a light beer from Miller Tallboy.
Well, that's a shame, but that you couldn't get an actual beer. But nonetheless, well, here I am with a Lagunitas, which is right in your town, George. Chicago comes out of Petaluma, California as well. This is Lagunitas, little something hazy, unfiltered. Pretty well describes me, don't you think?
Unfiltered, yes.
Hazy and unfiltered. But there we have it. Anyhow, so in a year, George, in which so many people are feeling isolated, some despair, certainly divided. People's Action has been reaching out and deep into Trump country. Other groups talk about, the media talks a lot about, some politicians talk about, well, there's Trump country. But you found something else, haven't you?
I think it's too simple to say any place is Trump country, for one. I just got to say that. And I think we got to push back on that whole myth. And second, when we've done rural organizing for a long time at People's Action, but as Trump was ascending, clearly we got to do more. And so we went out to in 2017, knocked on 10,000 doors and asked people what they cared about. We didn't try to sell anything or get people to work on what we thought they ought to work on. And we asked three questions. What do you care about? What do you think the solution is? So we didn't project our solution on their problem. And third, who and what do you think is responsible for the declining conditions in the community? And then we did what good organizers do. We worked on the exact stuff people said. And so people said it was, you know, they needed a rural living wage. We'd win that. If they wanted to stop a fracking pipeline, we'd fight that. Factory farm, Medicaid expansion, whatever it was. And we won, and we moved people into multiracial organizations and out into the arena doing protests and town halls and stuff. And we won all this stuff. And I think one of the big lessons is there, go out and listen to people and see what they got to say versus go into town and sell what you want to sell. So I'd say that happened. And we thought we were winning because we were getting lots of people together and we were winning on the issues and people were starting to bridge across race in ways they maybe hadn't before. And then we ran into something like somebody that was very in might confide in the organizer, say, God, I love this organization. I got my t-shirt. I paid my dues. I love how we're winning on this stuff. But I'm just going to be upfront with you. I can't get with you where y'all are at on immigration. It's just like, it's too far for me. And so we're like, okay, all right. And we knew this was going to happen. Like, I grew up in Southern Indiana. No surprise to me or any of the organizers. And 20% of the electorate is pro raising the minimum wage, expanding public health care, and getting big money out of politics, but regressive on immigration. So we said, okay, you know, my feeling is people know what they know. I don't think, you know, people aren't born progressive and they're not born conservative. That's something that happens in your lifetime.
Right.
And so we set up this deep canvas model where we're going to go knock on doors in Michigan, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and have long, 20-minute conversations on the front porch with people. These are like non-judgmental, radical empathy. We're not going to debate you. I'm not trying to beat you in an argument, because trust me, nobody wants to get beat in an argument. Like, that is like the worst way to try to convince somebody to do that.
And at least to fist fights in bars, I can tell you that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, and we've all tried that and didn't work out well unless you had a good power analysis. But we did this deep canvassing, and we actually had on the question of like being more welcoming of immigrants, and we had a really specific policy. We had 20% a 20% movement rate in people being more welcoming of immigrants in our federal policy. Based on one 15-minute conversation on the front porch. And it lasted 4.5 months. That's the last period we measured it. And we go out and actually talk to people, listen to their stories, share our stories, but don't try to beat people in an argument. Some good stuff can happen.
So deep conversation really means you go beyond the obvious and the conflict points. And as I recall, something I read early on, maybe even before this campaign you were doing, George, that the most common reaction as your canvassers approached somebody on a front porch and said, what matters to you, that they say, nobody ever asked me that question.
That is the number one answer we got. Nobody's ever asked me before. Nobody's ever asked me before. Nobody's knocked on my door in years. I haven't seen a Democrat in a couple of decades. Like, these are the kind of things. But I think more than anything, you're right. Like, nobody ever asked me before. And it really meant a lot to people that we started where they were at versus coming in like we're the experts.
What a condemnation of our political process.
Right.
That the vast majority of people have never been asked what they think.
No, they're used to what we call verbal leafleting. People just come in and basically repeating what the leafleting is and then just move on to the next door.
Yeah, it's tremendous. Well, you've got one of your great organizers, door knocker extraordinary, is Maria Elena Fournier. Tell us a little bit about her, and let's bring her into our conversation here.
So we launched this program really recently, or not really recently, like in 2018. starting with immigration. We've moved it in. We can talk about what we're doing on Trump right now. And Maria Elena has been there from the beginning, knocking on doors in Macomb County, Michigan, which a lot of people would say was the kind of home of the Reagan Democrat, up into rural towns and small towns up there. So she's knocked on tons and tons of doors in majority, overwhelmingly white areas to talk about immigration. And then also done that over the last few months since COVID, maybe longer, talking to people about Biden-Trump. Trump voters on that, like, so you'd be hard pressed to find somebody that's had more of these rough conversations and a bunch of beautiful ones she can tell you about.
Well, Maria Elena, thank you for joining us. And as I understand, your initial reaction was that you were bewildered by the reaction you were getting.
Yeah, and thank you for having me again. My name is Maria Elena, and this has honestly been a life-changing experience for me because a lot of us come into this work with some preconceived notions or biases on how people are going to respond. On the news, we hear this narrative, and it's very different depending on which news outlet you need. So you go in with this preconceived narrative that rural Michigan, rural anywhere, is just Trump country. And once we started knocking on doors and calling people, we realized that that was not the case. People in rural Michigan are not just, not a monotony of people. There's immigrants, there's, you know, people who are in their old ages, you know, late 90s, 80s, very interesting perspective on immigration from when their family came over compared to younger generations, you know, people in their 40s who have a very different view on immigration. And it's very interesting to see as well, because a lot of us think that cities and rural folk have very different needs. And that's not the case, because after speaking with these people, we see that they also share food disparities where they don't have proper access to supermarkets, and same for in cities, or they have a really big have access to a hospital, or they don't have access to good health care. And as you all mentioned, people will tell you, I have never had this asked to me. I've never had someone tell me that my story matters. But when we go and knock on doors or call them, their true lived experiences, they're like, wow, I can't believe you're asking me this. And a lot of times it gets very emotional because we're hearing and sharing experiences that are very validating for one another, because we go through life thinking, let's say, for example, if you're in a lower class or you're struggling with poverty right now, in the system that's our fault. We're the problem in this, when it's really the system itself putting us in a really bad predicament. So it's very interesting to go and knock on doors and help people process their cognitive dissonance, while sometimes us ourselves processing it as well.
Tell us a story about one of your door knocking. I mean, how that progresses. You knock on the door.
Here, yeah, you are. So you
I'm Maria Elena, from born in Puerto Rico, living in Detroit. You know, I'm knocking on your door.
Yeah, so when we knock on doors, we like to just build a little bit rapport at first, you know, check in and see how we're doing in general, and then going right into sharing stories and what issues matter to us. So a lot of times we'll just immediately start asking, like, how do you feel about healthcare? How do you feel about the current situation with COVID? And that way we can gauge, you know, what side of the political scale they're on, what issues really matter to them, and what they're struggling with, so that we can better talk to them about our stories. So we'll start with that. And if they don't share a story, we'll share a story. So like you mentioned, I would share that I'm originally from Puerto Rico. I have immigrant parents, and I struggle with a lot of access to healthcare. And a lot of times we'll share very deep stories. Like, for example, I have pre-existing heart conditions, and so do all of my siblings. And it gets really frustrating when we try to go and get access to healthcare, knowing that the resources are there, but because of our insurance status, we don't have access to it. So we're put into this situation of life or death just because of where we are, or, you know, our status with healthcare-wise. And almost all the time, the person will respond to us that they have a similar story, because all of us have struggled in some way, shape, or form. So a really powerful story to me was when we started door knocking last year, I met this older woman, and she was in her late 80s, and she was originally an immigrant from Germany, actually. And when I had first asked her about how she felt about immigration and immigrant rights, she did not feel that she had a say in that, and she didn't feel like she had a stake in that issue. And then once we started talking more about, you know, my story and then her story, she realized she was an immigrant and her experience was very different. And she's not surprisingly was a Trump supporter where we were. And she would put herself as a strong Trump supporter. And once we started talking, she shared about her husband being a Korean War veteran and how the VA system really did not help him get through his tough times. And he unfortunately had, they as a couple had to decide to put food on the table or to put his Alzheimer's medication on the table. Mm. And they unfortunately, and this is not an uncommon story here in the US, they had to choose putting food on the table so that they'd survive. And he unfortunately passed away because the VA system and the healthcare system couldn't provide the needs for him. And my father actually went through a similar situation, almost identical. He was a Vietnam War veteran, and he also passed away because we couldn't afford the proper Alzheimer's and dementia care for him. And me and her really bonded on this because these are really impactful, powerful stories that shape how we feel about the political system and how we feel about our neighbors and how we feel about validating our own experience and those of others. And she didn't realize her stake in this with healthcare, with immigration, with food accessibility. She didn't realize her stake in this until we had a conversation. Yeah. And it got to a point in the conversation where she heard herself say some not conservative things, but some very, you know, racially prejudiced things about immigrants. And then she paused and looked at the floor and said, "I'm not a racist." And never did I call her that in our conversation, but she herself started realizing the rhetoric that she had been using from TV, right, or what she had heard from other neighbors. And she herself realized after talking to us and sharing, after talking to me and sharing her experience, that, wow, I have these views that are inaccurate. This cognitive dissonance that I had has now been cleared a little bit because I'm talking to someone and my experience is valid, and the other immigrant or my fellow immigrant is not my enemy. We're both struggling with the same thing. Me and her both had healthcare stories. We both had VA stories. You know, and this conversation with her actually went on for a whole hour. Oh. And shared many more stories about her access to healthcare. She had just recently, you know, broken a rib, pulling out a weed in her backyard, but she couldn't afford to have someone help her with it. So we shared a lot of stories, and it really changed her in the end, because at first she wasn't pro universal healthcare. Then she realized her family would have really benefited from that. And she said she would want a better world for her daughters and for her granddaughters. And before that, she didn't think she had a stake in it until we had a conversation and told her, your voice matters, your life matters, and you deserve to be heard and hold these politicians or companies accountable.
This is what deep canvassing is about. And you know, it's interesting that last week or so, Donald Trump is off on a tirade about we need patriotic history taught in our schools. Well, part of that patriotic history is how the German immigrants were the villains at the founding of our country. Benjamin Franklin himself going out to say, we've got to get rid of this pestilence that is coming into our own country. So I agree with Trump. We need a real history about patriotism in America, but I have a very different view than he does as well. George, following right up on this, it seems to fit in. Y'all now started, y'all being the People's Action Organization, great grassroots group. And we've got the connections to how to find People's Action and the work that they are doing. And they're in numerous states around our country. But you've got a regular podcast that you're putting out now that has a name that fits what we're talking about. It's called To See Each Other. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so To See Each Other really tracks the organizing we've done over the last 4 years in five rural communities. And really the main goal is to push back on this whole notion that we can write off huge swaths of the country that a lot of the country doesn't know, and that there's like really good people there fighting like hell to make things right, going up against, you know, big ag or the, you know, big fracking or whatever it is, and also people bridging across race and ways that a lot of people would not expect. And like, we think we need to tell that story and push back on this. We are not. One, like, I know we are better than that to write people off. I think progressives are better than that to write people off. I don't want to be on a team that where we write people off. We've written people off in this country where we wrote off Black people, we wrote off Native American people, Latinx, women, queer, like, and so let's just don't do that. And so I say that's what we're doing here. It's called To See Each Other, and it's documentary style. We go to the places, somebody's family farm, the deep canvassing, people fighting, you know, against white supremacy down in the South. So, you know, I'd hope people check it out, because from what I'm hearing, it's like giving people, in a moment where you really are having to search a little extra hard to find some hope, this might be a place you could get.
Very good. Well, Deanna's got our Brooklyn connection, Deanna.
Hello. Zant,
and she is going to bring on some folks, some comments for some of our listener viewer types. But yeah. Before we jump on it, let me intrude for a second by saying that I grew up with this. That's why to see each other is a powerful phrase for me, because I grew up in a I went through high school in a totally segregated schools in a community that had substantial black residents. And it was not till I went to the university 70 miles from my home, University of North Texas now, that I sat next to children, kids who were black kids from my town. You know? And once you see people and you know them and you talk to them, it's impossible to hate them. It's impossible to not understand that we're all in this together. Deanna, go ahead. Bring us in some folks.
Thank you. Well, first of all, we've got people from all over representing tonight, which is always my favorite thing, is to give the shout-outs. We've got Elgin, Texas, Taos, New Mexico, Green Bay, Wisconsin, Norman, Oklahoma. All, you know, feel free. Hello from Houston, Southwest Minnesota. Lots of good questions, and actually, just to give you a boost for your podcast, Simon says that he actually just finished listening to the podcast, and he said that it was really good, and it's definitely worth listening to, and he's in Colorado Springs, so he just let us know. So first question in, we've got two main questions here. Let me see if I can get them back up on my screen. Jennifer has a question for George about how effective is deep canvassing when compared to other more conventional forms of voter contact, and how expensive is it to do this type of canvassing, and what do people at home, what can they do to support this work?
Yeah, that's a good question. So yeah, it's actually highly effective. And we had academics in to come measure it, but we just ran a phone canvas experiment. So in the context of COVID, to see if we could move people from their plan was to go and vote for Trump. Like, that is their plan. They named that to their plan being to go vote for Biden. And we did this on the phones. These conversations are lasting 15 minutes on average. And the movement rate overall was a 3.1% shift in people going like, I'm gonna move to voting for Biden.
Wow. Which,
at one level, it doesn't sound like a lot, but it's actually more than enough to swing the election.
Yeah, could be the margin.
We right now we're doing 300. Our goal is to do 350,000 of these conversations between now and the election, some of which we've already done. So we're but you want to get a little more interesting. Independent women voters, we moved 8.5% through these conversations, and these conversations are very much about care. I mean, one interesting thing, and Maria Elena knows it better than me, but we'll ask people, the calls a lot of times start with like, how you doing? After you do the little preamble and the introduction, how you doing? Everybody's like, I'm fine. And then the canvasser says, well, I'm not fine. And then they tell a little bit. And then the person on the phone's like, you know what? I ain't fine either. So like, just, and something starts to happen there. I got an email today from somebody that had an hour-long conversation, someone from Pennsylvania, an 82-year-old woman, who's decided to give Biden-Harris a more serious look based on that conversation. So it totally works. And, you know, I mean, anything that involves paying humans fairly, which is what we do in canvassing, is going to cost some money, and we're going to pay people fairly. Let me just say this.
Right.
I went out door knocking on this immigration canvas in Pennsylvania one night, and I swear to God, Sean Hannity answered the door five doors in a row. And I was like, I can double check how much we're paying people, because this is not easy. So, but The academics that studied it said it's 102 times more effective than what we usually do.
Wow.
I was even like, really? 102 times? That doesn't even sound, if we put it in the press release, nobody's going to believe it. And they're like, that's the truth. So I think it's highly effective. And then I don't know if, I think our Joey from our staff is on and can put a link in. We run trainings every night. We did an event with Bernie and Pramila from, you know, the Senate and Congress the other day. We had 700 new canvassers. We'll train you every night. And the great thing is you can canvass with us, but a lot of people need this model to go back to Thanksgiving and go to talk to their parents. This is applicable in a lot of parts of your life.
Yeah. Well, here we are again. We're talking about talking to each other.
Yeah.
Fundamentally, wouldn't it be amazing if a political party, maybe one called the Democratic Party, would step forward and engage in this somehow or other, and instead of hiring, you know, multi-million-dollar-a-year consultants and listening to lobbyists and pollsters who don't have a clue about what is actually happening to people in the countryside. And I have a lot of empathy for a lot of Trump supporters, because they feel disowned and dismissed and generally dissed by the Democratic Party and by a lot of liberal organizations. So we got to get back to the notion of the people themselves, it seems to me, and that would bring up the notion of people's action. Where are you in this country? A lot of people, they think, well, I know Move On, I know the Democratic Party, I know some unions, you know, but people's action, where are you? What do you do?
We're in 30 states. Ideally, in those states, we try to do a mix of being in urban, suburban, and rural places, because we think that's what it takes to win. So start to bring people together. You know, and then we organize people. A bunch of Bernie staff came onto our staff after he dropped out. So they're doing more of a distributed program that brings even more people in. We have now 2,500 new volunteers just through the last 2 weeks are helping move people. So that's where we're at. We're all over the place. We just got to figure out how to get in those 20 other states, but we're growing. Yeah.
Well, 30 states, that's a pretty substantial, right there. I think we've got to take a pause here and for a musical interlude. Something you might not know about George Gale and about the progressive movement generally. Historically, the progressive movement has been a movement of music, a movement of food, a movement of community, a movement of humor, jokes, and liveliness, and bands, and fun. Let's put the party back in politics. That's my slogan. And George Gale can do that. Look at what he's got in his hand right there. George is just a son of Southern Indiana, a center of bluegrass power in our country, and from which John Mellencamp, just to name one.
Hey, George, can you hold it up? Because the viewers, the way the cameras are right now.
There it is.
There it is. Look at it.
Yeah. But yes, he can hold it.
That's a banjo,
can he do
y'all.
Anything with it?
It's a big deal. I on my little Twitter account, which I'm not a big Twitter fan, I took banjo player off of that after you asked me to play banjo on this, because I'm kind of shy about it. But I'll just do a little bit.
All right. About that, folks, a political organizer with an actual talent. Who would have thought it? Was that Cripple Creek
going up? That was Cripple Creek.
Cluck O'Hen, but Cripple Creek would do
it's
too.
It's all the same song.
Yeah, they're
all in the key.
I think fitting with our theme here, that a lot of people are lost in the despair. Grandpa Jones, I think it was, a great banjo player and country musician, had a song about the gloom, despair, and agony on me, deep, dark depression, excessive misery. If it weren't for bad luck, I'd have no luck at all. Gloom, despair, and agony on me. Well, we can't subside into that. That is a defeatist attitude, and we've got great organizations like people's action with people like Maria Elena out there doing this kind of door-to-door work, connecting with us and rallying us to rise above the despair and to actually do something about, first of all, to figure out we actually are in this together in fundamental ways, and then that we're in this together for a political movement. Deanna, you got some more comments coming our way?
First of all, mad love to George in the comments for this banjo action. Maria Elena also, you know, she and I sitting here snapping along, clapping along, and there was a lot of love for that, so keep it up. William has asked, what does deep canvassing during the pandemic look like without doing harm? You know, if you're not actually door knocking, how is it happening?
Good point.
You should take that.
Yeah, so since we can't go door-to-door canvassing, I mean, I'm sure we can, but it's not safe, and we value ourselves, especially during this time. So instead of knocking from door-to-door, we use regular phones, and we just have a list of numbers that we call in our community, and that's just how we do it. We just call them right directly with our phones, and if they want to have a conversation, they'll stay on the line, and if they don't, they'll just hang up. But it actually makes it a little bit easier for us because we don't spend that much time going from door to door. You know, after people don't answer, we can just keep dialing and dialing and dialing to make sure we can get conversations in. So the only thing that's really changed is building that rapport with folks, because they don't know who I am calling them. They don't know any of us who are calling them. And a lot of times our number may be from a different state. So we have to really build this trust and rapport at the beginning of the conversation so people feel comfortable talking to us. Or they'll start saying things like, oh, I only care about the economy, but they won't share a story. So the only thing that's really changed with phone canvassing is we have to make sure that we're extra, you know, empathetic.
Can I ask a question, Maria Elena?
Yeah.
Do you think this would have worked? Because we have a really high pickup rate on the phones right now. Do you think something different's happening because of the pandemic, people being a little more receptive to a phone conversation? Or?
Yeah, so when this all first started, people had very mixed emotions on COVID. Some people were really happy that we were able to stay home. Some other folks were very reactionary and didn't want to talk because they had to stay home. But right now, people are actually more likely to listen and answer the phone if they don't have children or if they're not going to work right now, because they want to have a conversation. All of us are home alone, or we're social distancing from our family members or from our neighbors. So people are actually really receptive to answering the phone right now. They just want to have a conversation and for their voice to be heard.
Well, let me ask you, Maria Elena, a question that I think of when you're trying to do door-to-door work or phone work, how hard that is. And as George indicated, you get five straight Sean Hannity's answering your call and hanging up on you and et cetera. Is it overall, is this up? Do you find it effective? We've seen the results of that. But for you personally, is it uplifting? Is it depressing? Is it scary? What?
Yeah. So for me personally, I find canvassing as a form of harm reduction, because if we don't knock on their doors first, it could be, you know, the alt-right, your, you know, fascist knocking on their door. So we want to make sure we're getting to them first. Yeah. And sorry, could you repeat the question really quick?
Well, just basically, is it uplifting for you to do this, or is it drudgery?
Well, sometimes after we have conversations with five Sean Hannitys, it can be rather emotionally tolling. But in this work, we make sure that we do a lot of self-care to make sure that we're not losing emotional labor everywhere. And I personally, the worse the person is on the phone, the more I smile, because the more work I need to do on this person and the more I need to talk to them and dig deep into their experience. Because when there's people with Sean Hannity, you know, levels of beliefs, there's a lot to unpack there. And I just, the worst things they say, the more I smile, because I'm like, I'm ready to unpack this. And people will tell me on the phone, I don't want to talk about my feelings. I don't want to talk about my emotions. And then that's all they talk about. So I personally find it rather uplifting. Sure, it can get a little bit anxiety inducing sometimes when people aren't answering the phones or there's a lot of hangups, but it's really worth it in the end, because the people on the phone, sometimes you'll cry together, you'll laugh together, and you're building an emotional connection and making sure that your neighbors are being heard and your experiences are being validated. So I find it rather uplifting. And it reminds me, as well as it being a harm reduction, that We can't have a revolution or even something close to reform if we can't talk to our neighbors, if we can't talk to our families and get on the same
page.
We can't change the country if we can't change our neighbors and our families first.
So that's so important, I think, because I think a lot of people would like to make a difference. And, they've got a telephone or they've got the ability to go around their neighborhood, but they're intimidated by doing it. They think, oh, well, there's going to be this hostile reaction, and maybe they will even, target us and abuse us and et cetera. But you're saying from experience, not just you, but the people's action generally, that there's room for this and that people should feel welcome, and you give them some comfort to do that, some training to do that, and then some room to take care of themselves in the process.
Yeah, and even when we have different political perspectives on the phone, like even if we completely disagree, these folks will admit that it was a very powerful conversation and they were just glad there was someone there to listen to them. Some of them, they may go off on rants and they still at the end, like, thank you for listening to me. Thank you for wanting my voice heard, because I think George mentioned this earlier. We don't want to do anything unless the community wants to do it. And letting the community know that they can be a part of this. And a lot of times we all say, like, oh, one person can't do anything, or my one vote or my one perspective doesn't matter. It does, because we need many of us for it to matter, And yeah.
Jim,
go ahead.
Oh, just one thing. I don't remember where that little country church was. We went, Maria Elena, up in Michigan, and you said, like, one of the big outcomes for this is, like, you were just done. And, as a person of color canvassing in, I would think, 95% white rural community on immigration, you said, you're like, I'm not writing anybody off. Because even people that don't agree would be, and I went and knocked on some doors and I was like, man, I recognize you from when I grew up. I was scared of you then with the big camouflage on and the guns and the, and everything. And then they'd sit there and people, the toughest guy would get vulnerable with you. But you told me you were not going to write anybody off. And that blew me away.
Yeah. And it's definitely interesting because we don't know what the person is going to say or how they're going to react until we hear their story and until they hear ours. So it's nice to not write people off just because they say they vote for Trump or just because they have, some form of symbol outside their house.
I think that's what they call democracy. But I don't want to get pontifical here. So, Deanna, we've got some more folks wanting to comment.
Yeah, just another quick question about the canvassing. I think this has been really intriguing for a lot of folks because many people don't have this experience and don't know what it's like to call up and have that. Our very own Melody, Melody, wants to know if people ever try to change your positions when you're doing the canvassing. Do they try to canvass you back?
Yeah, they definitely try to flip the cards on us. And that's why I say the worse their perspective is, the happier I get, because you'll see that we in this work, we do not try to debate people. We will not throw facts at them. We just want to talk to them experience to experience. And that way we can actually listen to each other, because I've had people on the door tell me, well, yeah, that fact is valid to you, but I don't consider that fact valid. It's like, okay, we clearly cannot talk, data or facts, because it doesn't work. We have to talk based on our experiences, and we can include that information in our story. So when people try to change my mind on, immigration or undocumented immigrants, we talk to them about, well, this is my experience. This is my friend's experience who is an undocumented immigrant. They pay into the tax system, but they don't get any benefits out of that. And that's how we slide little facts in there, because we don't want to debate them. And we don't want them to try gaslighting us and our experiences, because we want to make sure that we're validating each other with our lived experiences the whole time and not pushing facts at each other.
And just a quick follow-up comment, that sounds like that's part of what the training is, that people can get with if they volunteer at the URL I'm about to post on the screen, that they'll be trained in how to do this and not just sort of sent out.
Yeah, that is so important. And in a couple of weeks, we're going to be talking to the leaders of the Highlander Center, which is a historic organizing training center for progressive action began with labor type of issues, moved into civil rights. Martin Luther King went there. Rosa Parks was at the Highlander Center. I think it was 2 weeks before she got on the bus and refused to sit in the back of it. That was not by accident. That was because she knew what she was doing and she had support to do it. And that's what I want our folks to realize, is that we are a movement. Or if we're going to be anything important, we have to become a movement that has these components in it that we share with each other, and we build with each other, and we expand, and we welcome, and we have music, and we have fun, and libations. I always believe in lubricating the movement. I think that's important to do. But so let me ask one more thing, George. Because you had another program this summer that was also an outreach program, mm-hmm. That was even more social, really. And that was you had a series of cookouts across rural America, in Trump country, as it's called. Yeah. Tell us about that. What the hell was that about?
Yeah, it started when the crisis really right hit at the border in terms of children being separated from their families. And a lot of rural folks and People's Action are like, I want to go down and show our support. Folks that had no money, even some homeless Appalachian folks saying, I wanted to go down there. One man who used to think it was us against the immigrants until he was locked up when his daughter needed a surgery and he couldn't get out to be with his daughter when he needed that surgery. And then he thought about the people he washed dishes with and he's like, wait, I found the enemy. But it's not migrant families that moved to Haywood, North Carolina. It's somebody else.
I think yeah, I know there you go.
Are. So a lot of people are doing that. But then we said, we got to keep this up. And so we organized cookouts all across the country. Many of these counties, 65, 70% Trump, but that's not what should define a county. And we'd get together, cook up a bunch of food, whatever it was for that region. And we'd talk about family. We'd talk about immigration. And some people were more kind of further woke on some of this stuff than others, but people got into it. And then we'd pass the hat to raise money for Bond. And I'll never forget in Eldora, Iowa, Julie Dunn organized a cookout there. This is the only county in the state of Iowa that had a contract with ICE. And her husband didn't have the same views. He was a, you know, consistent Republican, but she still made him go pick up the ice and the Coke for the event, sit through it. And there was a lot of that happened. So, and really the deep canvassing is just an extension of our belief that you got to like sit down with people like we used to. We got to bring them back. Look, yeah. I'm a fighter. I've taken probably more people to the homes of the rich and famous than anybody. I take people to Alan Greenspan's house, the Marriott brothers, Carl Rove's house, Tim Geithner, Ben Bernanke, taking over shareholder meetings, and we still got to do that kind of stuff, but we're in a different kind of fight now where we got to figure out how to grow through addition versus subtraction. And this whole kind of cancel culture, if you're not exactly right on all the shit right now, you're not in, that's subtraction. We're going to win. This is my friend Maurice Mitchell from the Working Families Party. We're going to win through addition. We got to bring more and more people in.
Bingo.
And the cookouts are one of the way we do that. The deep canvas is going to be the way we do that. Next year, we'll be talking to you about some new way we're doing it. But it's all from that sense. We got to sit down and talk with each other.
Cultural experience is really what we're engaged in here. And it's already having enormous impact. So, I mean, you know, the national media, the media establishment focuses on presidential politics, maybe senatorial politics, but the real politics is at a grassroots level. And we are having enormous success. This is the biggest story of progressive importance in the country that's totally unreported, or generally unreported, and that is that we're winning these races for sheriff. We're winning the races for state legislative seats. We picked up 450 legislative seats, Democrats did, because of Bernie Sanders type, Elizabeth Warren type candidates running in the 2018 cycle. We picked up those new seats. We hear about the squad, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and the other four just prominent, terrific women who won seats in 2018 to the Congress in the United States. We've already picked up five new members who are similar to that this year. Already we have done that before the general election. We're going to pick up more in this coming election. There's a big change coming, and it's coming because of ordinary people organized by people like you. So it is an absolute joy to be with y'all here tonight and to stay with y'all for the long haul. So, George, toss out, I know we've got it on the screen, et cetera, but say it aloud. What is the connection point, the website or whatever,
sure,
to get people plugged into you?
Yeah, if you go to peoplesaction.org, it's pretty well organized. You'll find the rural work. You'll find the deep canvas work. We got what you just described down, but we call it movement politics, electing people down ballot. It's all on there. And then if you go to wherever you look at podcasts and type in To See Each Other, you'll find the podcast. I think if anybody was into this, they'll get to hear about deep canvassing fights. And, you know, the folks in Iowa CCI, that's going to be a hell of a episode. Yeah. So check
it out.
And I just want to make sure we say that Maria Elena works for an affiliate of People's Action, Michigan People's Campaign. So definitely look them up online too.
And all the groups, they'll be on that website. The local groups in 30 different states. They are terrific. They're genuinely grassroots, genuinely progressive, genuinely little d democratic. And that's what we're fighting for right there. Thanks to both of you for spending a little time with us here tonight, but mostly important for the terrific work you're doing. Let us stay in touch and speak more often.
Thanks for having us.
All right. Glad to be with you. Thanks for everybody tuning in. Here we go. A happy, happy hour, don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
And that was our show. You can watch this and other past episodes of the Hightower Chat and Chew at hightowerlowdown.org/chatandchew. Keep tuning in here for your regular 2-minute dose of Hightower, as well as upcoming specials that we're working on for you. Till next time, and as Hightower always says, keep agitating.